On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy, supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Now, this Friday, the 12th of February in our calendar, will bring the Chinese New Year as we prepare to enter the Year of the Ox. It'll be celebrated by tens of thousands of people here in Ireland, as it always is. There's the Chinese Lunar New Year Festival in Dublin, which, of course, is going digital this year. You'd be forgiven for thinking that the relationship between the two countries is a relatively modern one. But actually, there's a surprising and kind of complex history which spans several generations between Ireland and China, from everything from culinary history to sports. And there's even maintain a few Chinatowns on this island, probably somewhere that Donald Fallon would ordinarily spend his Sunday afternoons if he wasn't holed up in lockdown right now.
How are you, Gaff?
Not too bad. How are you? The Year of the Ox, fittingly enough.
Yeah, it's worth noting the ox in Chinese culture is renowned for its perseverance and its hardworking spirit. And they are things that we need in abundance in the contemporary world, of course. But this is the latest in a long line of festivals and celebrations to go digital in response to the current situation. It's actually frightening to think we're coming up on you know, some festivals that have been impacted twice, like St. Patrick's Day. But I mean, people have to think on their feet, and they've very much done that with the Chinese New Year, Lunar New Year Festival in Dublin. And it's a great chance, I suppose, to look at the sometimes surprising connections, and some of them are very, very surprising, you know, from things like hurling to culinary history between China and Ireland.
Chinese hurling, I'm looking forward to getting to that. I used to have a friend in UCD who used to know people who were involved in the Dalian Wolfhounds Gaelic football team out in China, which is mad. They think of it as soccer city, but they love any ball sports. We'll talk about the sort of unlikely cultural ties, but part of the reason why they're unlikely is because I suppose you could probably say even into the second half of the 20th century, there was virtually no Chinese community in Ireland.
It's extraordinary. In the 1950s, there was a brilliant Chinese writer called Chiang Yi. He was a poet, a painter, a travel writer. And he wrote an amazing series of books called The Silent Traveller, where he visited the cities of the world from, you know, Oxford to Boston and everywhere in between. But one of the places he came to was Dublin. And this Chinese travel writer reckoned he could stay an entire year on the island of Ireland and not encounter another Chinese person. And you know what? In the early 1950s, he was probably right. It was a slight exaggeration, perhaps. There was a tiny Chinese community here. But, you know, the Ireland of 2021 is a very, very different society from the one that Chiang Yi visited. Mm. The Chinese community here is now estimated in the tens of thousands of people. So it's one of the largest ethnic communities. Some say the largest ethnic minority community in the country today.
Yeah, and of course the Lord Mayor of Dublin herself, the child of two Chinese immigrants as well. Our diplomatic history is very, very new, especially when you compare it to our nearest neighbours as well.
It's extraordinary. We only established diplomatic relations with China in 1979, which that's to me wild. And our embassy in Beijing opened in 1980, the same year kind of China's first ambassador to Ireland was appointed. And there's all kinds of reasons for that, as we'll get into, you know, the global power play, Ireland's relationship with America in particular, I think. But what we did have, I suppose, throughout the 20th century, what we didn't have, what makes us different from the neighbouring islands, is that we didn't have that significant Chinese community here. And anyone who's been over there in Merseyside in Liverpool, I mean, Liverpool's Chinatown stretches back to the 1860s, which was remarkable. Wow. You know, the Blue Funnel shipping line created very kind of strong economic links between Liverpool and Shanghai in particular. And Dublin is so close to Liverpool. You know, as the crow flies, it's technically the closest city to us. But Liverpool was a powerhouse of industry by comparison to us. We just didn't have that connection. So what you end up with in Britain, because of the real economic ties with China, are, you know, Chinese mariners, dockers settling there. And then there's a knock-on economic impact. There's shops, restaurants, accommodation, all catering towards those Chinese workers. So Britain and China are bound in a lot of ways historically, not always fondly, it should be said, in ways that our tiny little island just wasn't. And our engagement with China was entirely different from that, you know, of Britain. In Britain, it was about industry. It was about, you know, getting your hands on the world, if you will, from Asia to Africa for economic opportunity. Ireland has our own kind of curious colonial past, which is missionary work.
So there were Irish missionaries going out to China and to other parts of the Far East like that?
Anyone who was lucky enough to see a brilliant documentary on TG4 a couple of years ago on Mission Sateen, the China mission, would have got just amazing insights into this really curious story. Columban ministry priests in China from the 1920s until the 1950s. It's actually up now on YouTube in its entirety, but it's a really fascinating look at hundreds upon hundreds of Irish people who went to China in a missionary capacity.
Yeah, I suppose that the reason why I sounded fairly incredulous about the idea of Irish missionaries going out there is because we know now that there isn't much of a Christian community in China, but that's probably for very different reasons nowadays. But I suppose even then, they would have been going out there at a fairly bad time, wouldn't they?
1924, I mean, a disaster, a very strange time, you know, a time of what's been described as political chaos, famine, floods and war. But you might argue, you know, all mostly familiar things to Irish people. But these Columban missionaries, you know, and Catholic nuns and the like, we're talking about hundreds upon hundreds of people in China through really tumultuous decades. And there's a great surviving picture from that documentary, and I included it in the notes I sent you, of Father Thomas Quinlivan, Tipperary-born priest, clutching a hurl with the Columban College hurling team in China. And what's incredible about the team, when you look at them, you know, they're not a team of young Irish missionaries in China. They're a team of young Chinese lads, which is just extraordinary.
It's a brilliant picture. I'm actually going to tweet it out now in a couple of minutes' time. Actually, if you keep an eye on the hashtag on the record NT, I will tweet it out. It's a cracking photograph.
So it's Ireland's impact, if you will, on the world beyond their own shores. And then when this major crisis hits China in 1931, I mean, an area twice the size of Ireland is flooded. 2 million people lose their lives. A total disaster. It's Irish missionary priests, you know, and sisters on the ground who are at the fore in administering relief during that. The single worst natural disaster in human history. And one of the worst affected cities of the crisis was Wuhan. And it's Irish missionaries who are, you know, in the thick of it on the ground. So there's actually a kind of, even though, of course, the Catholic Church in China went by the wayside in the 50s, there's this fond remembrance of these Irish Christian missionaries that exists in places like Wuhan.
Yeah, and just to touch back on that just for a very, very brief moment, by the 1950s, of course, there would have been pretty much no welcome for Irish missionaries or missionaries from anywhere else.
Exactly. All Catholic missionaries are basically expelled from the country by 54. And then you have the long kind of Cold War diplomatic dance, you know, where Ireland is trying to undo a lot of the very real damage that was done to our relationship with America by World War II, our neutrality in the war. So we kind of swerve any kind of, you know, formal relationship with China or the DDR or anything else that could rock the boat with the Americans as far as we see it. So despite having had hundreds upon hundreds of people working in the country, Ireland and China are basically in silence in the decades that follow.
Just before we move on as well, it's probably worth remembering that I know that the Chinese Premier Xi Jinping, who is in the news for different reasons of late recently, he is also said to be soccer mad, just like the people of Dalian. But there are no photographs of him ever posing with a soccer ball or a football of any sort. So whenever any international media needs to find some picture to illustrate how fond of sport he is and how he wants to use sport as the next kind of Chinese cultural powerhouse, they always end up finding photographs of him with a hurl and a schlitter and a Gaelic football in Croke Park, because it's the closest he's ever come to holding a football on camera, which I'm always kind of tickled by. Speaking of Irish influences, again, in a strange way, it probably could be said that the establishment of relationships after things began to cool down a bit could be laid at the feet of the chieftains.
Yeah, three decades on from all that in the 1950s, the expulsion of Irish Christian missionaries from the country. There's this incredible moment, this album, The Chieftains in China. The Chieftains were the first ever Western musical group to play at the Great Wall of China, which is remarkable. And the story is that the Chinese embassy in London had gone along to the Royal Albert Hall and had witnessed the Chieftains perform live and said, oh my God, you know, we need to invite these people to China. But in the absence of a Chinese embassy in Dublin, it was pretty difficult to pull it off. But eventually, when we had established diplomatic relations, it came together. And the Chieftains played to over 700 million people, a gig that was broadcast to 700 million people in China, which is absolutely incredible. And in the spirit of the Chieftains and the genius of Paddy Maloney, they kind of incorporated Chinese sounds and musicians into the work. And if anyone hasn't heard it, The Chieftains in China is just a masterpiece of an album. But I think that had a very real impact, not only on the kind of musical consciousness there and propelling the band to the prominence. I think the Chieftains at the Great Wall of China had an impact on how Chinese people thought about Ireland. And I think it definitely helped. You know, we'd only established those diplomatic relations so late in the day, but I think it helped to cement them and was very, very important in its own way, the power of music.
I mentioned it kind of half jokingly in the introduction, but there are Chinatowns of sorts emerging, not only in Liverpool, obviously, but on the island of Ireland today as well.
Yeah, it's a very recent story, this kind of significant Chinese community living here. And it kind of began in the Celtic Tiger years, kind of more and more Chinese students in Dublin, and eventually many of them decided to stay here. And we've kind of replicated the experience of Liverpool, of London and cities on the neighbouring island, because what's happened there is that these districts of Chinese commerce, they tended to emerge in areas that had been in economic decline, you know, where you had low rent, very transient business that came and went. And in Dublin, that was Parnell Street East. So kind of right of the Parnell statue as you're looking at them on O'Connell Street.
Yeah.
And to a lesser extent, I would say down Moore Street. And that area has kind of become known colloquially in Dublin as Chinatown. And I noticed that Google calls it Chinatown, but...
Oh, is it really?
Google doesn't... Yeah.
So Google isn't responsible for street naming.
Google is now naming streets across the island of Ireland. But interestingly, what people in Dublin don't tend to know and across the south don't tend to know is that in Belfast it's happened too, in the area kind of around Donegal Pass and the Dublin Road. So kind of south Belfast as you head towards the Armour Road. And you have a number of kind of Chinese businesses, restaurants, even a Chinese retirement home there, and a kind of fading mural of King William of Orange amidst it all. You know, like a historically kind of Protestant working class area, but it's been in very steep decline economically, and it's become a kind of Chinatown. So north and south, you have these districts. And I think what they show when you walk down Parnell Street or when you walk down you know, Donegal Pass towards the Armour Road, they show real ingenuity and, you know, the sense of reinventing and making something off it, which is for me what the Chinese community are very much synonymous with right across the continent of Europe.
Yeah, they're always very resourceful in where they're able to set up shop and to try and build little neighbourhoods of their own. Chinese food, as we understand it, a lot of people would probably think that it sort of emerged around about the same time, that if you had a large Chinese influx to the country, that's where it came from. But actually, its origins come from a different people entirely.
I think in a culinary history of Ireland, and the great big book of Irish food history awaits someone, but I think the most peculiar thing about it is that Ireland's kind of love affair with Chinese food, as we understand it, because of course a Chinese person will tell you what we consider Chinese food is a kind of bizarre hybrid of Western
Asian
food
fusion,
and Asian fusion. But that really arrives in Ireland in the late 70s with migrants from another country entirely, the so-called boat people who left Vietnam in 79. We took in just over 200. Of those kind of Vietnamese refugees. And they were the ones, these kind of entrepreneurial Vietnamese families with these takeaway food trucks before even restaurant spaces introduced what we now know as Chinese food. But if you walk down Parnell Street now, you get the genuine deal. I mean, you get Korean food, Japanese food, Vietnamese cuisine, Chinese food. But one thing I love on Parnell Street is that one of those restaurants, Pho Phiat, is actually run by a family who were among the Vietnamese to come here in 1979.
Oh, wow.
But they were the ones. It was the Vietnamese, if you will, who introduced Chinese food as we know it to Ireland.
Today, of course, there are far many more connections and new ones popping up all the time.
It's amazing. And when you look back at that great image of Father Sullivan, you know, and his team of Chinese Gaels around him armed with hurls, it is worth saying, you know, where we are today is remarkable. I think Father Sullivan would be pleased to know that we have the brilliantly named Asian County Board of the GAA. So that's quite the county, you know, by population. They might even beat Dublin someday. But the Asian County Board teams, yeah, great names in there. The Canton Celts, you know, the Beijing GAA and others. And very strong links, of course, emerging all the time between Irish and Chinese universities, economic ties. And as you said, it's so significant that this year, Dublin's Lord Mayor for this festival, Hazel Chu, is the first ethnic Chinese mayor, not only of Dublin, but any major European capital. I mean, that is something quite remarkable. So in China, and I know people have been in China in recent years and have settled there in various lines of work, St. Patrick's Day is celebrated. We're a very small community in China. Wherever there's 20 Irish people, they'll have a parade. And that's true in Beijing. But the celebration of the Chinese Lunar New Year here, you know, I think that's something that's growing all the time. And I think it's testament really to the new relationship between the two countries.
Yeah, well, if there is a St. Patrick's Day travel festival for cabinet ministers, and we know there's still controversy around whether Micheál Martin is going to Washington, but if people are going anywhere, it's always now an immovable part of the whole ministerial calendar for Patrick's Day, which probably says an awful lot about the significance of it, but also just the way in which it's celebrated in that part of the world as well. Donald, we will leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us as ever. Donald Fallon, a historian, the author of the Come Here to Me books and the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast, which you'll find anywhere you get your podcasts.
On the record, on News Talk.
With Pinergy, supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.